Hey guys, Alan here. I'm really excited to bring you a special episode of The Periphery. Today's episode is actually going to be hosted, guest hosted, by Dominic Stetsua. He is a non-resident fellow with us, and Dominic is a political scientist and also a Polish-American. And he's going to be interviewing Dr. Ben Stanley. Dr. Ben Stanley is at SWPS University in Warsaw, formerly known as the Warsaw School of Social Psychology. And he is a sociologist and political scientist. He researches voting behavior, political parties, populism, and the state of democracy in Central and Eastern Europe. And they're going to be talking today about the elections in Poland, law and justice, sort of where things stand, the future of democracy in that country, a look at kind of why things have shifted for law and justice and what we might can expect in the near future. I think it's a really exciting and fun episode. I'm really glad Dominic could guest host for us, and I hope you'll enjoy his conversation with Dr. Ben Stanley. And here it is.
My name is Dominic Stetsua. I am an assistant professor of political science at Colorado State University, and I am a fellow with the Pulaski Institution. And today we'll be talking about the Polish elections with an expert on Poland, Dr. Ben Stanley. Ben is a political scientist and a sociologist at SWPS in Warsaw. And he is an expert on populism, on Central and Eastern European politics, and on Poland specifically. So let's dig in. So before we get into the specifics of what happened, the election was lauded as the most important in recent Polish history. I think there's a lot to it, but why was it the narrative, and was the narrative correct?
Well, this isn't the first election that's been lauded as the most important in recent Polish history. You often hear before pretty much every election I can remember that this is the most important since 89. Maybe only once or twice have the stakes been seen to be lower. But I think that this time around, there was a real sense that this was a sort of a make or break election for liberal democracy in Poland, because a third term for Law and Justice would, it would allow it to argue that it had a strong mandate for carrying on its what it's been doing over the last 8 years. And I think it would also have been a significant blow to the opposition, who would have had a third term for Law and Justice being unprecedented. The opposition would have been put in a position of thinking, well, there's no way we can push back against these guys. You know, we can't even when we try to cooperate with each other, as they did in the form of an umbrella coalition, a civic coalition, and two other parties that explicitly said that they were fighting as a common opposition. Even if that can't work, then what can? And I think there would be concerns if the opposition had lost this election that those who support the opposition parties would have started to have the same kind of despair about the capacity of the opposition to get it together at all, as we see in Hungary, for example, where there's a lot of concern among supporters of liberal democracy in Hungary about whether the opposition parties have any real capacity to form a united front against Fidesz. So I think that it was crucial in that respect, because Law and Justice has had 8 years of unbroken victories and unbroken, creating the sense that it's a party that can't really lose. And at least this time around, the opposition has given it given Law and Justice to understand that it can't consider itself this hegemonic figure on the Polish political scene, that it does have genuine competition.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And one thing that I've been thinking about in the context of this is obviously the nature of the media landscape in Poland, and obviously a lot of the narrative about why this was the most recent, why was this the most important election, dealt with freedom of the press and the courts. But on the freedom of the press side, you know, watching as a Polish person living abroad, I don't watch public service broadcasters regularly, but from what I was seeing on social media, kind of clips of how Telewizja Polska was covering elections, how Wiadomości, the news broadcaster, every evening, what they were talking about, it really kind of makes Fox News here in America look like the BBC. So with that with that context, and just the broader notion of freedom of the election and fairness of the election, was this a free and fair election?
I would say that it was free still in the sense that parties were able to compete. I mean, the results, as you can see, shows that it's still possible for opposition parties working together to remove law and justice from power. What if I compare with the situation in Hungary, for example, where the electoral system is so gerrymandered that 45% share of the vote gets Fidesz something like 60+% of the seats. There, you're talking about free elections has become pretty pointless. So I think in the sense of it being possible for opposition parties to compete and in a political system that at least still contains the possibility of them being able to get an electoral victory. In that sense, we can talk about the election being free. Where fair is concerned, it's been repeatedly commented on both by election observers and by those who are familiar with the workings of the Polish media, that public media in Poland is essentially a sort of a propaganda outlet for law and justice and has been for a number of years. It's worked to really to sort of to tip the electoral campaign discussion in law and justice's favor. And we could see that very much in particular during the last day of the campaign before the election silence hit, where it was essentially a kind of the last news broadcast before election silence was essentially a sort of a greatest hits of all of the things that the opposition public media have been saying about the opposition over the last few years. Simply trying to hammer home the narrative at the end of the election campaign that voting for the opposition is something that you do at a great risk. So they have had the public media as an instrument through which they could push their agenda and also depreciate the opposition. There have also been other factors such as the use of a referendum, which took place on the same day as the elections, and was essentially a sort of exercise in trying, first of all, to get around electoral spending laws, because you don't have to. When a referendum is conducted in Poland, the cost of the referendum is essentially taken care of by the state, and it doesn't factor into party spending laws. So there are no restrictions really on what could be spent on the referendum. So the referendum campaign could essentially be used by Law and Justice as a kind of parallel election campaign. They could push some of their key issues like safety and security of the whether Poles wanted to tear down the border wall on the border with Belarus, whether Poles wanted to accept the European Union's policy on the relocation of migrants. And the referendum questions, firstly, bore absolutely no resemblance to what any student of these things would regard as good practice for question wording. And also were very conveniently sort of echoing Law and Justice's campaign narrative. So it's essentially a way of getting their issues on the agenda without having to worry about spending limits, and also being able to do so at the ballot box. Essentially, you're filling in your referendum form at the same time as you're filling in your voting slip for the election. So you have Law and Justice's agenda in front of you as you fill out the ballot box form for the election. So in that sense, there were a number of advantages that law and justice was able to avail itself of: the media, the referendum, more generally the support of state-owned enterprises for law and justice, their use of their advertising capacity, and their ability to sort of contribute to law and justice's campaign while ostensibly informing polls about issues such as how they have benefited from various policies over the last few years. There were ways in which law and justice could essentially sneak its narrative into the campaign without having to think about the same kind of restrictions the opposition had to think about. So in that sense, there was an unfairness built into the system, both because of media domination, but also because of the other resources that Law and Justice had as a governing party.
Gotcha. Now, turnout was historic, and a lot of the coverage of the election focused on that. It was close to 75% last time I looked. Why was it so high, and were these the new voters that came out? Like, who were these people, and does that mean that the turnout in future elections we can expect to also be higher? Because historically, turnout in Polish elections did tend to be on a lower end compared to some Western European countries.
Yeah, one of the reasons why it was high is because, you know, it's been on an upward trajectory over the last few elections. So in that sense, it's, you know, it's consistent with what we've observed previously, although no one was really expecting the extent of the leap over 2019, when it was somewhere in the low 60s. But just to put it in context, in 2005, turnout was around 40%. And when turnout increased in 2007 to just over 50%, this was hailed as a kind of a renaissance of electoral democracy in Poland, essentially the idea that at least half of the eligible voters were actually bothering to turn out to the polls. So in 2019, when we had a turnout of over 60%, this again was seen as something quite significant, and there were hopes that that could be emulated this time around, but nobody was really expecting it to be quite as high as it was. I think part of the reason why turnout was high relates to, you know, also why turnout was high 4 years ago, because there is, you know, something at stake in mm-hmm. politics. One of the reasons why turnout was low in previous elections was the sense that really there were limited alternatives and limited chance for those alternatives to actually mean something. Politics in the civic platform mode was very much about more about competent administration than the kind of mobilizing political narratives that we associate with law and justice. In a sense that they never really made much of an effort to try to get people to turn out, and the public didn't seem to perceive politics as being really, you know, something that they could have a significant impact on. I think that changed when Law and Justice came to power, and the realization was that, you know, we are in a much more, you know, significantly polarized political landscape. We have the two main political parties that have not only, you know, differ in terms of their policies, but also perhaps more significantly have a substantial difference between each other in terms of their general perception of what democracy in Poland should be and should look like. And so the opposition has been mobilized by the fact that there is has been an increasing consciousness among previously somewhat lukewarm or unenthusiastic voters that there is actually a choice to be made here, whether we continue with what Law and Justice is doing, or, as the opposition supporters seem to have decided this time around, we need to push back against that. I think that in terms of who it was, this is also relevant. Two groups stand out. One is younger voters. And when the exit poll came out, one of the first of the the exit poll turned out to be very accurate, and one of the first sociodemographic breakdowns that everyone was struck by was the fact that turnout among younger voters were sort of 18 to 29 was slightly higher than turnout among 60 plus voters, which is
that's unprecedented, right? That's
I posted about this on social media when I saw these results, and I had people from lots of other countries saying this is not just something that's unprecedented in the Polish case. This barely ever happens.
Exactly. Definitely doesn't happen in the United States, right?
So and this was this was a huge evidence of mobilization here. I mean, certainly when talking to students the day after the election results came out, a lot of them were, they said that they had the sense that they and their contemporaries were more motivated to go and vote before. But even they were shocked at the sheer extent to which young people had been mobilized. And the other sort of source of mobilization, one of the reasons why Law and Justice didn't do as well as it'd been expecting, seems to have been increased mobilization in small towns and villages, but among that section of the population, which typically in smaller towns and villages, people there will be more likely to vote for Law and Justice. But what seems to have happened is that people who live in small towns and villages who have previously been either unenthusiastic participants in elections or have never voted before chose this election as their moment to swing towards the opposition. So in Law and Justice's strongholds, in the sort of small towns and villages that provide the backbone of their electorate, they have held on to a certain extent to some of their more loyal voters, but people who have not previously voted, or people who perhaps have been whose vote has been more up for grabs, seem to have very much swung behind the opposition in these areas.
No, that's interesting, and maybe I'll add to that has been my experience voting abroad. Historically, it's been very dominated by Law and Justice supporters in places like Chicago and New York in the US, and in places like Toronto in Canada. And this time turnout has been considerably higher. Mobilization definitely succeeded, including younger people abroad voting. When I was voting in Denver, I certainly noticed a lot of younger faces. And Law and Justice so won in the United States, but that margin was significantly lower than historically it's been the case. So that mobilization was certainly the case even for Polish voters abroad. So maybe go ahead.
Voters abroad tended to be quite, in terms of their voting behavior, have often been quite mercurial. In some countries, certainly in the UK, we've seen the precursor parties of the likes of Confederacja or Cookies in his times of having a significant support among voters in the UK. Certainly, proportionally more so than in Poland itself. I mean, where overseas voters are concerned is, because all those votes are counted in the Warsaw constituency, they contributed to the opposition mounting up lots of votes in that constituency that they probably didn't really need all that much. But I think it's the demonstration effect of lots of people voting all around the world in consulates and embassies. People see these images. People share images of these on people doing this on social media, and undoubtedly that has an effect on galvanizing voting behavior back home as well. The more people have a sense that everyone cares about this election and there's lots of people mobilized to vote in it, the more they themselves may feel motivated to go and cast a vote back home. So I think that it has kind of, right, the mobilization of overseas voters has maybe not had a particularly strong effect electorally in terms of determining seats, but on the other hand, has had an impact on turnout as well by providing an example for others to follow.
No, I think that's right. And also, I think people were justifiably upset that it has been harder to vote in this election than in previous ones, because there were less places, for example, to cast your ballot. There was an ability to vote by mail, as was the case in the last election. So I think that added to this sense of mobilization, right? That kind of, if you want to silence us, well, we're going to show up. One thing I wanted to talk about as well, kind of moving on to more kind of specific parties and their performance, Confederacja, which is the far right party you briefly mentioned already. It was an interesting campaign from them, very social media centric. At various points in recent months, their support oscillated at around 15% in some polls. But yet they've entirely collapsed in the election. So what happened with them? What exactly was at fault there?
Well, there's this sort of concept in the Polish media, and particularly in the Polish political media, of this you'll know this yourself, being familiar with the context, as it says on Ogórkowy, cucumber season, basically.
Yeah.
The period when nothing really happens, and news organizations are looking around for the media is looking around for all sorts of nothing stories to follow. And I think that Confederacja was the beneficiary of that over the summer, because everyone was aware that there was an election on the horizon. There were people were starting to get mobilized for this, but a lot of the the other parties were, in terms of their campaign rhetoric and in terms of their policy promises, were keeping their powder dry for now, whereas Confederacja were very active during the summer in trying to mobilize support. They had said earlier in the year that their 15% was essentially their aim for the election, and they thought that was on the upper edge of what they could expect, but that was what they were going to shoot for. And over in the summer, they were indeed, they were polling pretty much that, as you were saying, in numerous polls. But it seems as if they, it's their performance in the end, which was pretty much half of what they'd hoped for, is a combination of two things. One is that this is a party which has always had a rather unpredictable electorate. In various incarnations in the past, Confederacja, which is essentially, it's a more a coalition of several parties than it is a party in its own right. The elements that comprise it have tended to do no more than about 5 or 6%, and in many cases have fallen below the electoral threshold. So there was an attempt to sort of professionalize this coalition to some extent, to make it a more coherent and potentially more electable party. But the problem that it has is that it tends to attract the support, or at least has tended to attract the support, of predominantly young male voters. And that is a constituency which is pretty unpredictable in its electoral behavior. You might get 15% of the electorate saying that they'll go and vote for Confederacja, but among those will be people whose participation, whose turnout and to go and vote in the first place can't be taken for granted, and who might be more likely to change their mind at the last moment and vote for another party. So that sort of sense of a lack of a strongly disciplined core electorate is probably one of the reasons why the party did less well than it expected to. And indeed, a number of commentators drew attention to this before the election, that this is a party with a bit of a soft underbelly when it comes to its electorate, and we can pretty much guarantee that that they'll be that support for them will be overrated. I think that the other reason why they didn't do as well as they'd hoped to was simply because they went out a bit too hard, a bit too early. And by the time it actually came down to the electoral campaign proper, what had seemed like, you know, something quite appealing at the time, with people like the leader of one of the leaders of the party, Swoboda Menzel, and essentially going around Poland, having beers with the electorate and kind of trying to ingratiate himself essentially with the typical Konfederacja voter in a number of locations around Poland. What seemed like quite a sort of a refreshing approach to political campaigning in the summer sort of started to wear thin. There's only so many times you can see a picture of Menzel holding a beer before it sort of becomes clear that he's got to have more strings to his bow than this. And indeed, in a number of performances in the media closer to the election, it became pretty clear that his political ideas, while they might have been quite quite striking as slogans, didn't hold much water as policy. And so there was a sense, I think, toward in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks of the election campaign, that this was a party whose main ideas had essentially been found out, and that there was no more energy left there to try to drive Konfederacja over the line purely on this kind of campaigning charisma that had got them where they were in the summer. So they essentially, they made a bit of a moonshot during the summer and mistimed it ultimately.
Seems like they also maybe hit their one of the founding fathers of the party a bit too late with noted anti-Semite and misogynist and all kinds of other things. Janusz Korwin-Mikke obviously was talking about age of consent, and some of the candidates that were down the list on in some jurisdictions who were spewing all kinds of controversial, is the mild word maybe, yeah, to say, positions on eating, consuming dogs and things like that. That certainly probably didn't help either.
Yeah, I mean, their reputation as a rather sort of as an unconventional party, to say the least, probably, you know, helped them attract attention to themselves during the summer, where nobody else seemed interested in trying to make the initial running. But as the election gets closer and as people start to think more seriously about who they're willing to vote for, they start to look at some of these people and think, well, you know, if the guy who's 13th on the list for Konfederacja in this constituency thinks that Poland is populated by shape-shifting lizards, then what does the guy who's 14th think? So as the election came closer, people sort of started to look at this party and think, well, okay, this is fun as a bit of knockabout, but do we actually really want more of these people in parliament?
No, that's great. So I guess I'll combine two things into one. So obviously the other big party that we should talk about is Law and Justice. And Law and Justice kind of has been handling the results of the election in a somewhat confusing way, because on the one hand, they've been saying that they won, and obviously they won more votes than other parties, but obviously don't have enough to form a government. But at the same time as saying that they won, they were also leaning into some conspiracies following the Donald Trump narrative of election being stolen. And it's obviously not the first time Law and Justice is blaming electoral results on fraud. But so there's this confusing messaging about this. So on one hand, maybe let's talk about that and what's next for Law and Justice, and just in generally what's next in terms of the results of the election, and like when will the government be formed, and what does the process look like? Because it's, I think, a lot more complicated than some people who are unfamiliar with the Polish system would think.
Well, essentially the situation as it stands is that the president can nominate whoever he wishes to be prime minister. I mean, theoretically, he could nominate you. He could nominate Robert Lewandowski, whoever he wants, as long as
he would be more popular than me, probably.
Yeah, but I mean, he might have a slightly more chance of sort of putting together a governing coalition. But essentially, he is at liberty to decide who he wants to be prime ministerial candidate. Usually, that has been resolved by the fact that it has been clear that the largest party also has the greatest chance of being able to put together a majority. And so there hasn't really been any debate about who is the most credible candidate. This time around, we have a situation in which Law and Justice is the largest party in terms of number of seats, but it has no obvious coalition partner that can get it over the line. So the question has been whether there is any credibility to the idea that Law and Justice is going to be able to, in the next couple of weeks or so, put together a coalition of 231 or more MPs that would allow them to govern as an overall majority. They have said, essentially, that they believe that they can do this and have started to make overtures to some of the more conservative politicians of the Third Way coalition, in particular those who come from the PSL, Polish People's Party. So given that President Duda is clearly, as a politician that comes from Law and Justice and one who has been aligned with Law and Justice throughout his career, even if he's not formally a member of the party at present. He has been unwilling as yet to rule out the possibility of Mateusz Morawiecki being able to put together a Law and Justice coalition, even though nobody who's looking at this objectively can really see how they could possibly put that together. The opposition has already said, well, we have a three-party coalition that has 248, I think, seats in parliament and is able to offer a robust majority right from the beginning. And so that's put President Duda in the position of having to signal that both Mateusz Morawiecki, the current prime minister, and Donald Tusk, the putative next prime minister, are serious candidates. As things stand, it would take a very significant effort from Law and Justice to be able to wrest enough support away from the opposition parties to be able to get a majority. But as things stand, there is no there have been no clear moves on President Duda's side towards saying to Law and Justice, look, you guys lost and you're going to have to accept it. You're going to have to enter opposition. He is still leaving that open. So we could be looking at a situation at which the current Prime Minister Morawiecki is given the opportunity to try to put together a coalition, and ends up potentially if he does manage to wrest enough support away from the opposition parties, managing to get just enough support to be able to govern. But by far the most plausible turnout is that the opposition sooner or later will be given the opportunity to go for a vote of confidence in parliament. But
and when you say sooner or later, like what how long are we talking here? Because I think people are kind of confused about how long it could actually be.
Yeah, well, there's a three-step process essentially, whereby during the first month after the after the election results are in, the president has the prerogative essentially to nominate a prime minister. If that prime minister is then puts together a cabinet, goes to parliament, and attempts for the first session of the new parliament and attempts to get a vote of confidence and is knocked back, then parliament has the opportunity to put forward a candidate. And at that stage, that would be when the opposition would be able to put forward their candidate without the president being able to do anything to block it. So much depends really on whether there is any credibility to the claim that some in Law and Justice are making that they actually have been able to get some opposition MPs over to their side. But everything that I'm hearing about these kinds of negotiations suggests that they're not meeting with the kind of response that they've been hoping for. So it could be that President Duda will simply bite the bullet and say, "Well, I've seen no sign that Morawiecki has any possibility of getting this, putting this coalition together." But he's clearly been minded to leave the door open for them to until the last moment that's constitutionally possible. Where the question about electoral fraud is concerned, I mean, this is something that rather than have sort of any credible allegations having been made about this, I think that this is more the sort of the kind of mood music of a governing party that expected to squeak home and didn't quite make it. I think it's more an expression of their frustration than something that's really being taken seriously. And it's not really something that's been voiced in substantial measure since the first couple of days after the election. We've heard the talk about how Law and Justice lost because of young people treating the election as a kind of game, for example, or that Law and Justice lost because the opposition parties were heavily sponsored by foreign organizations, in particular the Germans. The Germans are always the ones who are blamed for any kind of foreign intervention that seemed to be to have any sort of efficacy on the opposition side. And so I think that there have been various ways in which Law and Justice's major figures have attempted to kind of process their sense of disappointment at losing these elections. And I think that the stuff about electoral fraud was a part and parcel of that rather than anything serious. That having been said, one of the aspects of this election that tends not to have been paid too much to it is the fact that the election has to be the results of the election have to be validated by the Supreme Court. And what is crucial here is it's by a chamber of the Supreme Court, which is staffed exclusively by politicized Law and Justice appointments. And so what we could potentially be facing is that if there are any irregularities that could potentially provide a pretext for either partial or full annulment of the results, it could be possible that in some constituencies, for example, reruns of the election could be essentially ordered by the failure of the Supreme Court to validate results in those particular constituencies. So there are instruments that could potentially be used to invalidate the election in part, even if the suggestion of electoral fraud doesn't really seem to have much substance behind it.
Thank you. Now, just to be mindful of your time, last question, but there, just broadly speaking, what's next for Poland? And presumably, and obviously a lot of the parties, a lot of the narratives before the election was centered on holding Law and Justice to account for what has happened during its tenure in power, and trying to maybe democratize, unpoliticize some of these institutions we already talked about, such as the public service broadcaster, Telewizja Polska, the courts, etc. So assuming that the democratic opposition actually forms a government, how do you envision these next few years of their tenure on those fronts? Like, how exactly do you handle some of these things without the appearance of a politicized purge, essentially? And we already are seeing people on the right talking about protecting free press and free speech in Poland because of the anticipated changes to, for example, the public service broadcaster. So how do you go about these changes in a way that maybe is perceived as legitimate without having the appearance of it just simply being partisan politics just from the other side?
Well, I mean, there is a lot of discussion now about what can be done among those who are sort of concerned with restoring pluralism to public media, with unwinding some of the changes that have been made to the judiciary over the last few years. And what is striking about this is that there is a lot of disagreement between reformers, those who are going to be involved in these processes, about what can be done and how it can be implemented. So when I think about what comes next for Poland and what comes next in particular for a new government, there is going to be a very difficult period ahead where they're going to struggle to maintain pace with the kind of expectations that people had, and certainly their supporters had, with respect to the sorts of changes that that it's possible for them to make. While law and justice hasn't baked itself into the political system in Poland quite to the same extent as Fidesz has in Hungary, some steps have been taken, for example, with the body that oversees public media, to essentially entrench law and justice sympathizing figures in a way which makes it difficult to imagine that many significant changes can be made to the political bias of public media overnight. And this would have been a difficult enough task for a party, a single party with a governing majority, to undertake. What is going to make this doubly problematic is that we have a very ideologically heterogeneous opposition formation looking to put together a government at present. We've already seen some of the political differences and the rivalries between these parties emerging in the discussion of policy priorities, ministerial appointments, and so on and so forth, the typical stuff of government formation. And I think that after the initial euphoria of having defeated law and justice starts to pass, a lot of these differences are going to emerge and are going to make themselves much more salient, both at elite level and certainly among the among these parties' electorates. And so any government was always going to face problems trying to unwind lots of changes to the judiciary, which are very complex and very difficult to resolve. And this government is going to be trying to do that while at the same time trying to keep happy parts of a coalition that essentially runs the gamut from fairly orthodox socialism to the kinds of conservatives who in other circumstances might themselves have joined law and justice rather than the opposition. So there are potentially plenty of problems ahead, not only for dealing with the rule of law problem and the restoration of pluralism in public media and many of the other changes that law and justice have made, but also with the more mundane, ordinary business of governing, which they're also going to have to do at the same time.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate all of your insights, Dr. Ben Stanley.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Periphery is a production of the Pulaski Institution. I've been your host, Alan Elrod. Our music was written, recorded, and produced by Brandon Ragsdale and Cody Smith. Thank you for coming, and please join us next time.